What does that
like with the mother cow and the nourishing values of, and why milk is such a huge part of Ayurveda, with the subtleties of it too, with mother cow and.
I don't know that. Go ahead. Okay. Why don't you just say it? yeah, please.
So, before I go kind of into the subtleties of it, so what I find is, it's quick, right? You see so many diet plans here in the West where it's like dairy-free, right? It doesn't agree. There's reasons why sometimes it doesn't agree. One, practically on a really straight-up level, there's a difference between A1 milk and A2 milk. A lot of times we don't know what we're drinking. We don't know the source of it, right? So A2 enzyme milk is more more digestible by the human gut. The other thing that Ayurveda provides is that the milk, how it's even made and boiled, right? So here we grow up like you go running to school, parents like, mornings are rushed, here, open the fridge, here's your glass of milk, drink it cold and you're out the door, right? Or you're like drinking out the door too. And so those are things in Ayurveda, it's like to have milk, mix it with water, boil it together 3 times, add some cardamom in it or something to make it more digestible, so that your system's not overworking, right? So it gives the medicinal properties to your system. It's very well nourishing. Right? And so there's a couple of reasons why, the cow is sacred, right, in the Vedas, like beyond the spiritual romantic things where, but it brings in an amazing, like mother energy, like mother cow, it's sacred for a reason in the sense that it brings that unconditional love, right? That's really nourishing for at a physical level, emotional level, and whatever it is that you're seeking in your life. So it's going to bring in lots of nourishment and healing into your being for whatever is needed. Anything made from milk, like ghee or buttermilk, etc., will have those properties, right? And milk also carries where it's needed. It's everything like herbs and milk, it's naturally intelligent, right? So wherever it's needed in your system, it's going to provide that health benefit or that whatever it is that it needs for you to have a very fulfilling life, not just beyond physical. Right? So milk is something, or anything made of milk, has that beautiful intelligence, right? It will go to whatever is needed. And you don't have to know that. You just have to do it or have a routine, right? And that's all you do. You live a routine and a life and rhythm, and then that system naturally heals itself in this way.
Like milk we have now, like in those, tetrapaths, ultra high temperature. I mean, now people are saying, the good milk if you can, but now it's not allowed.
Is it really milk?
Yeah.
Even almond milk or coconut milk and whatever hemp milk.
Apparently there's hardly
It's not milk.
It's not milk, right?
It's called milk because it looks like
Yeah, it's right. not. Yeah, we must remember that rice milk, coconut milk, almond milk, these are not substitutes for the milk that we are talking.
Yeah.
We are talking primarily, goat's milk is lighter than cow's milk. If cow's milk is difficult to digest, goat's milk is a good alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Goat's milk is also a great alternative for mother's milk, to feed a baby. It's a great alternative. So, and I must also clarify that this idea that the entire milk of the cow is for the calf is not really right. If the calf drinks the entire milk of the cow, the calf will fall sick.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the, most of the mammals produce far more milk than their children need. They produce milk for others to drink. So it's something that we need to be aware of, because there is this huge, propaganda that the milk of the mother of the cow is only for the calf. So
I don't know which Veda is it, or I don't know where it's written, or even if it is, but remember, like the cow has udders, right? So one udder is for the calf, one udder is for the master, one udder is for the community, and one for themselves. Like, you know, there's a science and a beautiful significance to each udder, right? Like, and that's science, it's natural science on how this is beautifully designed to give, right, in this way, the cow.
How about organic food? Organic versus, like you go in the grocery store, with Ayurvedic medicine, I think, or living, encourage organic food buying.
This is the whole thing that I love about it. You know, everything originally was organic.
Yeah. Yeah, but
right.
The thing is
then it got polluted, and now they're selling you the real stuff, but not packaged, and then they put organic on it. You know, you have to learn to look at your food and judge it. You know, just because somebody's got organic on it doesn't make it good.
I get that, but there's a lot of if you go into growth, there's a lot of chemical. We went to a friend or a relative's farm in Illinois, and what they put in the crops is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's dioxin, and this is a normal practice.
Yeah.
And that's where one is being fooled into thinking that, okay, it's fresh and natural, but it's not. It's being raised with chemicals, just like with chickens and what goats and cows and everything. Being given food, you know, with chemicals in it.
The organic food is,
yeah,
with the chemicals?
Well, no,
or
supposed to be, not, yeah, with organic. That's where, I mean, it can be, the FDA would say, okay, organic, okay, you can get away with this and,
yeah,
that and the other thing. I see with the labeling, you know, you might be able to fudge something. But mainly, I guess, what I'm saying is the ideal would be where it's in its natural state without any interference. Okay.
Yeah, that would be ideal. Just a couple of points in case. You know, one is about chemicals. You know, we are only seeing chemicals in food, but we are not thinking about the huge amount of chemical pollution that has invaded our life every day. You know, whether it's in the paints in these walls, whether it's the, you know,
yeah,
these sofas are coated with brominated fire retardants,
mm-hmm,
which is carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
The children play with small rubber ducks, which is again highly carcinogenic. The clothes, the night dresses of children are coated with fire retardants. There is everywhere. This flooring is giving off radon gas, which is carcinogenic. So there's a huge amount of chemical infiltration that has happened in our system today. Apart from all of that, again, that is also fine. The biggest chemical issue that we have today is the quantum of chemical medicine that we are taking. You know, from the simple headache onwards, we take a lot of chemical medicine. And the effects of these medicines stay with us for many years. It's not that, you know, it's over with one dose. That one dose of medicine leaves its impact on us many years later, 10 years, 20 years later. And the biggest places where the impact is felt is in the liver and the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be very mindful of taking chemical medicines. Use it if it is absolutely critical, but don't use it, you know, at the drop of a hat. You know, today people keep having chemical medicine all the time. That is one thing. The other thing I also want to again harp on is this idea of cleansing. You know, even if you are being exposed to chemicals in any form, whether it's in food, whether it is in the environment, whether it is in the form of medicine, the cleansing that you do on a regular basis will help a lot of it to not stay in the system. So again, you need to apply your mind to the idea of cleansing.
Can you suggest a couple of ways of cleansing?
Well, here in the US, you get Trifala. Trifala powder, I think Shweta will be able to get you some of
it. Trifala.
Yeah, Trifala. Trifala is a mild laxative taken on a regular basis. It's a good cleanse. Castor oil, like I said, is a great cleanse. I don't know what else you get here, but, you know, just keep the idea. Hot water. taking hot water with salt is a good cleanse. You know, you could put Himalayan salt or you know, I don't know what salt to get here.
Even just soaking black raisins at night will support your system in the morning, but it also helps build the blood. Something simple as black raisins, right? Yeah, it'll make your blood really strong, but soak them overnight and take it at night, soak them during the day, take them at night, or even in the morning.
You drink the juice of it and you
chew the raisins too. Oh. So something very simple, but like Dr. Ramkumar is emphasizing, the more you do it regularly in a routine way, that's going to give you longer, you know, more benefits too.
So cleansing is something that we need to really think of. In fact, one of the biggest contributions of Ayurveda is the idea of cleansing. You know, when we do it on a more intense plane, we are talking about a process called Panchakarma. Panchakarma it is called, where through five processes we eliminate. It's a drastic elimination process. It's not something that you can do at home, but it is something that we do with preparation, where we draw the toxins from all parts of the body into the alimentary canal, and from the alimentary canal we eliminate it either through vomiting or through purging or through enemas, depending on the type of toxins. That is one of the biggest contributions that Ayurveda has made, actually. The idea of an intense cleanse which helps considerably in many different conditions. Apart from for the healthy person, it also helps in a whole range of health issues. You know, we treat a whole range of conditions, and most of them we apply one or more of these cleanses. This is at the hospital level. But at the home, on a periodic basis, some form of mild cleansing is a good thing to do to reduce the impact of the chemical invasion that has happened in our system. Yeah.
So relatedly, so I'm just wondering, does Ayurveda address like the mycotoxins, the bacteria, and all the, like if someone's immunocompromised and the bacteria spreads from the guts to the lungs to the throat to them, they're just protecting themselves, encapsulating? I'm just wondering if the Ayurveda addresses these strategies, because like if you think about it, a lot of this stuff kind of now is under the microscope, and we're talking about a very subtle realm of even the way the doctors and professors are using language to describe what's going on here. I totally trust the innate system and, you know, original nature and mother wisdom and all, but I'm just wondering whether, because the average person just takes antibiotics, one or several over the course, it lowers their immunity over time, and I'm just wondering if you could comment as far as the immunocompromisation, as far as the bad bacteria being very dominant throughout the body from gut, lungs, and
yeah.
And then the second part, with the compromisation, the kind of recovering the damage from antibiotics, or whether it's done damage, you can't do anything about it.
Well, no, we do a lot of treatments where we are flushing out, like I said, the chemical effects, the chemical after effects are flushed out in different ways using Ayurvedic treatment. So we do that. You're talking about microtoxins. We are talking about nanotoxins.
Sure.
In Ayurveda, we are talking about toxins which are barely visible and which need to be addressed. You know, I didn't go into the principles of Ayurveda, but
sure.
You know, that is basically the level at which we are functioning. And that is why we are talking about drawing the toxins from the 1 billion cells in the body into the alimentary canal. It's not a permanent flush, because anything that is cleaned again gets dirty.
Sure.
But at least on a periodic, you do periodic repairs and maintenance for your house, for your car, for a whole lot of things. But you don't do it for your own self. So that's important to periodically enable a very deep level of cleansing, which will ensure that the body's immune system is not compromised when it is attacked by bacteria.
What if it's after the fact? The body was
so after that also
it's completely out of control.
Yeah, so
bacteria is just spreading.
So after that also you do this cleanse and then nourish. So we do this just as I talked about cleansing and nourishing in your day to day life. In the treatment process also there is a cleansing and nourishing. So you do a cleansing and then follow it up with nourishing, which strengthens the immune system and builds the capacity to resist further such attacks. What happens with antibiotics is that I think you all must be aware that in the operation theater they have to change the antibiotic protocol every couple of weeks. It is that quickly the bacteria get become immune to the antibiotic. So antibiotics are never a solution. They are just suppressing, and every time we take a course of antibiotics, we are further weakening the system. Whereas here, we are all the time looking at strengthening the system so that it can withstand the attack of the bacteria.
Energetically speaking, like from the Chinese perspective, I know there's the whole concept of jing, energy reserves and all this sort of stuff, so you have something that can be released to take on whatever is attacking the body.
Yeah.
We're talking from there, or more so the agents being released, kind of like more A to B, we're enabling the conditions for things.
At different levels. It's working at the subtle level, at the energy level, and it is working at the gross body level. So depending on the type of toxin that are sitting, there are different types of toxins.
Yeah, sure.
So depending on the type of toxins, both the subtle and the gross are being addressed through this process.
And the re-inoculation of the good bacteria, they say, like, with all the research and everything I've come across, they're saying get back to as close as 800 strains as possible by keep throwing in different probiotics in, but then
we
I
will
hear
not,
the probiotics
no, we do
acids,
not agree.
All this sort
we,
of stuff.
We do not agree. See, this whole problem with chemical medicine is the way they put in the vaccinations and then the probiotic. You know, whatever you get in naturally is okay. But when things are introduced into your system in an artificial way, that is definitely compromising the system. So I, you know, people ask us about probiotics all the time, this kombucha tea. I was in Thailand and they were trying their best to convince me that it is the best thing that is good, you know. But no, you know, you don't need to go to that extent of artificially introducing bacteria into the system.
So if you clear out all the bad, not all the bad bacteria, but if you clear out a lot of the strains using the detox protocols,
yeah,
isn't that person left at risk because of the ratio of the good strains of bacteria
absolutely
not being present, that if they don't get the good in enough, quick enough, that they're going to fall?
Absolutely. That is why it is important that the intensive detoxification procedures are done under strict supervision with complete physical and mental rest, and after that, you know, nourishing is done for a period of anywhere between 2 weeks to 2 months, depending on individual situations, wherein the system becomes strong enough to resist any further infiltration.
The practice that I'm in deals with the lymphatic system, and that's really a septic system of the body, and that not enough attention is done by modern medicine, I mean Western medicine,
right,
hardly at all.
Right.
And so it sounds like we're in agreement, a similarity here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Yes. The only thing, like I said, is we have to look at it from many different angles. It is not about one or two. There are so many different aspects. Like I said, there's the physical body, there's a mind, there's a consciousness. Within the physical body, there are the tissue, there are the cells, the organs. Flow has to happen continuously. And that's what lymphatic system is all about. You don't want blocks, you want flow.
Yeah.
We are not talking about flow only in the lymphatic, but we're talking about flow in all the channels
blood,
in the body.
Blood system.
We say there are 72,000 channels in the human body, small and big, 72,000 channels. And all these channels need to be kept as clear as possible. So continuous flow itself will ensure there are no problems in the system.
No, actually, I just had we were talking about dairy, and I just wanted to give a comment that the Punarnava website has a good article that you shared with me several years ago about dairy products, you know. So it's
I'll
about milk and yogurt, and so
the
website
it's
you can take
resource.
From Shweta, but you know, there's a beautiful article, several pages long, on the website.
Good.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you sign the sign-in sheet, I can follow up with the link
on it.
So, yeah.
What link?
For the article for Punarnava
on
Trust
on
and
our website,
yeah.
There are many articles about different aspects of Ayurveda, and he just reminded me that you know there's an article that I had written many years back on dairy, on the different types of cows and the properties of milk and you know everything in detail.
Yeah.
So that link will be forwarded to you.
So
thank you, Sandhya.
We didn't speak about it today, but I mean, for me, every time I think of Ayurveda, since I'm at preschool, not even kindergarten, I would think, you know, those three types, the Pitta and...
Yeah, yeah, the Vata, Pitta and Kapha. That's why I didn't take those names because it becomes another session in itself.
Yeah, yeah,
but
sure,
but
like
but those are thing. Those are some, like some of these nanotoxins that we were just talking about.
Like when we're talking about dairy, do we also...
Absolutely.
On your, like,
more than your constitution, the custom diet, the custom treatments are based on your current health status.
So you can change from one thing?
It changes. All of us are dynamic.
Okay, so you're not like necessarily a
No, no, your constitution is the same.
Oh, okay. That
but your status is changing every day from morning to evening to night.
Uh-huh.
It's changing. Now, you know, within another 1 hour, for the next 4 hours, it will be the pitta in you that is dominating.
Oh, okay.
So it's changing all the time. When you eat, immediately after you eat, the pitta is dominating. Immediately after you exercise, the vata is dominating. So I didn't say vata dominating. I said dryness increases at that point. I didn't go into vata, pitta, kapha because I didn't know how much of we know, you know, these because we'll have to explain that in great detail.
Yeah, me too, but I get an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And we can talk more later.
Sure.
Yeah, and there are, again, there are articles on the website that you could read.
I just have a little question. I think it's more personal because he's talking about antibiotics. Because my son took this antibiotic about 3 years ago. It's not fine. And it was just for, like, this prostatitis. And I kind of try to keep away from stuff because I was on antibiotics for a long time from UTIs, and it just wrecked my little, you know. But, you know, young, and he was hurting, and just couldn't take, no patience for alternative stuff, and I didn't know how quickly things would work, so we took this antibiotic. I said, okay, let me go get stuff to the gut and everything. Turns out it was, I don't know if you've heard of them, like quinolones, they're called, fluoroquinolones, and they're actually, they used to be chemo drugs that they now use, and they're very strong. They, you know, anybody be careful, because if you have, like, a UTI, they give them for, like, UTIs, bronchitis, pneumonia. They're called fluoroquinolones, but their common name mostly is cipro-levoquin, you know. And after, like, they gave him for a long while, but, like, sometimes you can take one pill, I mean, some people. And he started hurting his hands, his tendons, and then he's always looking on the internet. I was telling him not to do that, but it's always, it was helpful in this case where he was going on the internet. And I was hurting, and I saw all this stuff, and these things are horrible, and there's all these side effects, and people, even when they stop, they continue to have all these effects. So what are you talking about? This is so weird. You know, I look, and I said, oh my God, yes, stop it right away. And now it's been 3 years, he's struggling, up and down. You know, I've been trying all these different alternative things to, like, magnesium, this, that, change of diet. I mean, it's helped, but, like, every time he has a little stress, it just triggers. Sometimes he can't walk, you know, and he gets, like, his... spirit is pretty good, but sometimes he just gets really, like, depressed. And so I was just like, what can I do? You know, and when you look at all the stuff that's been written, and now there's a lot of groups of people, and FDA finally put a black box warning on it, but, you know, doctors are still giving it out like crazy. But they say it actually attacks the mitochondria, And so now he was affected mostly like tendonitis and like peripheral neuropathy. He gets like numbing. He can't like things. He can't feel his fingers sometimes and stuff like that. But some people get worse. Like they can't move at all. They get some people blind. It's crazy. And so I was just wondering, you know, like. Because normally, like, if you have, like, let's say a tendon in your Achilles tendon breaks, if it's healthy, it's like a sports injury, you just rest, it will, you know, rebuild itself. But in this case, you know, we try to avoid having any breakage or anything because since it's already compromised, it's really hard for it to, like, you know, like, rebuild itself. So I was just like, you know, what can I do for him? Like,
how old is he?
He's 25.
Does he take any amount of ghee or oil in his food?
In his food. He takes olive oil.
Okay. You should introduce ghee or sesame oil in his food.
What was the oil? Oh, sesame oil.
Because there's probably a lot of vata aggravation in the system right now.
Mm-hmm.
Vata and Pitta would have aggravated, the heat in the body and the dryness in the body would have aggravated. So I would say that you should straight away introduce ghee or oil in his food and also externally apply sesame oil, heated sesame oil.
Linda, how's somebody tell you about sesame oil? I'm sorry, I was going to tell you about.
Yeah, so now, we'll have to meet him to give a more detailed this thing. But these are small things that, you know, ghee taken internally is great because ghee is clarified butter for those of you. In fact, Sandeep and Shweta, they both have, you know, they give nice organic natural ghee they produce.
We have A2 ghee, I have bottles here, so I can talk to you more about it.
Yeah.
I have some.
So ghee is something that you pour in and so that the metabolic fire burns brighter and you digest well.
Mm-hmm.
If you digest well, then you know it's not just digest, you digest, absorb and assimilate and eliminate well. All four happen well, then half the problem is solved.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that contributes immensely. It also creates a lot of lubrication in the system.
What
so
does
which
that
is good. Ghee.
Ghee.
Yeah.
What about regeneration?
Regeneration,
you detox, you cleanse,
and then the next stage is the rebuilding and rejuvenation.
Yeah.
So for that we again use internal herbs.
Herbs.
Yeah. We use a combination of internal herbs in primarily a ghee base, which enables the nourishment. We use milk extensively at that stage. Milk is great for regeneration. You know, two great properties of milk are. One is it extends the life of the individual cells as well as, you know, our general lifespan. And it is a great rejuvenative medicine. It's the best rejuvenative medicine. Milk. Yeah. Milk has got these two. It gives long life and it rejuvenates. It's the best among substances giving you long life and rejuvenation.
It doesn't matter what.
No, it does matter. It does, you know, the milk has to be the A2 milk, the, you know, natural, grass-fed, all that. You need to ensure.
And so with the follow-up email, we have amazing farm underground resources that we have that you don't even have to, that Whole Foods doesn't have available. So those websites that are linked to farms, I'll send them out so you guys can connect with
that. You
have
to really order.
You
really can't get it. You can't get it.
It's because of the stupid laws and stuff,
the laws,
right?
Yeah.
So, but
was,
it is available. So I'll send those links there.
They were like more upstate stuff, so it was hard to get.
No, but it's really, they've created a beautiful system.
I think Pennsylvania, you can get, I think.
Yeah, the thing is, now they're delivering it here. I live in Queens, and I get my stuff local.
Wow.
I'm not driving hours or.
Sometimes they have it at the markets. No?
Yeah, so, but I'll send it all that information out. I have a question. So, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, when you talk about transactional, then there's a lot of practitioners in the room. And so when you're a holistic practitioner or embarking on any type of journey, there's this transaction that happens, right? Maybe through money, through healing, whatever it is. And then we were talking about greed. And so I was wondering if you can speak more about the impact of these transactional relationships, because at least here in the US, the conscious entrepreneurial world is rising and it's booming like crazy. Like a lot of us are entrepreneurs in the room. What impact does that have on ourselves, positive and negative, on our soul, our ego, mind, kind of, because myself included, and a lot of practitioners I know, I see how that is playing out, right, in different ways. It becomes this transactional piece, and it could get confusing or derailing. So if you can speak to that, on how to manage that with the mind and the ego in different ways.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, we've been, Shweta has been taking me on long train rides today.
Full circle.
Where she doesn't get down at the station that we are supposed to get down at. We go further, then we come back, you know, so.
So I get to talk to you, Mark.
Yeah.
So in the midst of those train journeys, we were talking about how this whole transactional mindset is affecting our own healing. It creates a huge block in healing ourselves as well as extending healing to others. Now, like I said earlier, with the emotions, you have you and you have the ego. And as long as the emotions are from you, it's fine. But when it moves into the ego space, that is when it starts creating blocks and impediments and disease and everything. Same way, there is a need that you have and there's a greed that the ego creates for you. The need is genuine, has to be met, has to be taken care of. The moment it moves into the ego space, it becomes greed and transactional, and there it never ends. You know, no matter what you have, you want a little more, you want a little more. It's one desire at a time, and the desire never ends. It keeps increasing and increasing and increasing. And while we may believe it's our genuine need, it is actually the ego that is driving that whole process. And as the ego drives it, we get sucked into this greed space, you know. And you can see that with everybody. Even the ones, the multimillionaires or the billionaires, are still looking for more and more and more. You know, nobody is satisfied. We talk about a word in Sanskrit called tripti or contentment. And contentment is very important in the context of our health, our healing, and our extending healing to others. If we are not content, it's very difficult to do it. So we were just discussing about the need again to make these distinctions between the self and the ego, and how the self can take you along one path which is based on need, which is full of contentment, peace, happiness, etc. And the ego can take you along the greed path, transactional path, desire, unhappiness, disease. You know, so these are two roads that we have. Now, as long as we are on the need path, we will get enough to take care of ourselves, to be comfortable, to be happy. But when we are on the greed path, we keep asking for more and more and more, and it never ends. And that definitely has a huge impact on the healing process. It gradually starts playing on the mind. There are multiple consequences of being on this transactional path. So I was just trying to explain how we need to be mindful of this. These are small things, but have a huge impact on us. And so even when we run, like as a hospital, we run, where I am in India, I run a hospital, and that hospital obviously charges the patients, because it needs to pay the bills, repay the loans and all that. But we have set an intention that 10 years from now, once all the loans are cleared and everything is done, we should be able to allow patients to give as per their capacity whatever they want. We should not have to raise a bill for them. You know, that's an intention that we have set. Because once the loans are paid and the place is on its own, then there is not so much more that we need. So we just, you know, you need to experiment with this in your own lives. That's basically what we were talking about. Because otherwise there's no end to this, you know, wanting more and more. And I can justify, I can say if I get more money from the patients, then I can treat more patients, I can build more rooms, I can look after them better. But it doesn't end anywhere, you know.
Well, what
that's
would you
a
call
cycle.
That? I mean, one's